Hi everyone, it's Gavin J, the best thing since gold. And you listen to Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. This week, I welcome back Pete Moles, who helps small businesses to grow while maintaining business and personal balance. Businesses can benefit through one-to-one coaching with himself, coach, and also group coaching through mastermind collaborations, networking through their online networking service, Networking In, and their flagship Making Your Dreams Happen workshop, The Power of Dreams. Welcome back, Pete. How are you doing?
I'm really good, mate. Thank you so much for having me back on to the radio. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm feeling really upbeat and positive and happy and ready to get going.
Fantastic. And we're really pleased to have you back, obviously, because, you know, it was such a good discussion last time. I remember we spoke about the power of dreams, etc. And I'm sure we'll touch on that today as well, with a bit of a different angle as well. Before you got to where you are, just remind us, you know, a bit about your background to, you know, and all the rest of it.
Okay. So going way back, because I think it all adds to the layers of context, going way back, if you'd have asked me at 10 years old what I was going to be, I would have told you a businessman, an entrepreneur, a millionaire. And essentially, while all my mates were wanting to be footballers, I was wanting to be a businessman. I followed some family members and kind of looked up to some family members in that regard. Studied business, wrote my dissertation on the characteristics of entrepreneurs, and went traveling, started a business age 25 in New Zealand on the other side of the world without a support network or, you know, anyone around. Started a business, and I raised money, had 8 people working for me. Things were going incredibly well with my life plan, it has to be said. And I messed it all up, mate. I was young, I was a little bit foolish, I made quite a lot of mistakes. One of the things that I've learned about myself relatively recently, I was diagnosed with ADHD last year. But one of the things about my time in New Zealand was, rather than focus on the stuff that I should have been focused on, the business, I started getting excited by other business opportunities and other business ventures. Long story short, I messed it up. And with that collapse of my business, it kind of felt a little bit like the loss of a child, although I, you know, didn't have a kid at the time. And I lost the money, I lost the business, I lost friends, and I lost my mental health. And I subsequently had a period of 13 years on antidepressants, which, you know, ultimately, it really was to me like losing, you know, a child, and took me an awful long time to get over. And I guess that, you know, the backstory is relevant because today we're here to talk about depression and how I overcame it.
Absolutely. And, you know, Pete, it sounds like, you know, wanting to get involved in different business ventures, I think that happens, doesn't it? We've all entrepreneurs. It's kind of something, and it sounds like you were so enthusiastic about it. You got involved. Would I be right in saying you got involved in too many areas, basically?
Yeah, I think there were a number of reasons why the business didn't work out. But I think when you say yes to something, you say no to something else. And what all business owners, young or old, need to do is decide on the end goal, where they're going, and then focus and stay focused on it and stay focused on it. And as hard as it is, you've just got to stay focused on that. Because what happened with me was I had a goal, but then all of a sudden something shiny came along and I went, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to spend some attention over here. And I wrote a business plan for that. And even if it's 5 or 6 or 8 hours writing a business plan for something else, it's 5 or 6 or 8 hours where you're not devoting your time to the thing that you should be doing. And I think it's safe to say that it's common amongst business owners, and it's not a secret that business ownership, ADHD, is rife amongst business owners. You know, there's an absolute correlation between people who have lots of ideas and you know, struggle to focus on things and the path that they choose to end up as an entrepreneur, I suppose. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it's uncommon at all for business owners to focus on more than one thing. But I think the reason that I ultimately do the job that I do now is to try and help people avoid making some of the mistakes that I made, Gav, when I was 25, 26 years old.
No, of course. But how long did you suffer for depression?
13 years. I was on the meds and I successfully came off meds about 40 times. So I say successfully, it's actually unsuccessfully. I came off meds 40 times only to have another kind of dip and end up back on them, and usually in a much worse place than when I was when I stopped taking them. And look, you know, it's a long, lonely, bloody hard fight with the black, I call it the black dog. One of the hardest things a human can go through is a fight with themselves.
Of course. It sounds like a bit of a nightmare, to be honest with you. Because then, do you tend to start questioning who you are and questioning your character and your personality and the person you thought you were? Because it sounds like it's that kind of thing happening. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting to talk to you about it from a place of power. And I'm really in a place of power right now, right? I'm off antidepressants for a number of years. I'm strong in my body and mind. But reflecting on the times in that interim period, that 13-year period, I don't think I ever got to a point where I wanted to kill myself. But there were definitely hundreds of times where I questioned, thousands of times when I questioned the validity of my life and whether people would miss me, and you know, thinking that that people's lives would be better off if I wasn't around, which is obviously complete nonsense from a place of sound mind. But when you're in it, it's a horrible place to be.
No, of course, and it sounds that, you know, what kind of symptoms was you experiencing at the time?
So there would be days where I didn't get out of bed, where I just cried and cried and cried. There were really strange effects on my brain. My memory went to shot. Like, I just couldn't remember anything. And I suppose it's because, you know, I struggled to concentrate on things, and the negative thoughts swirling around my head stopped me living in the present. And my memory suffered. I remember quite clearly my stepsister's 30th birthday. She'd arranged a ship in London for her 30th with all of her friends and family. We were going to go to London, and I just couldn't face it. I was crying my eyes out with my now wife, Sarah, and I was like, I can't do it. I feel so ashamed of every inch of my body that I just can't do it. And I, you know, my now wife, Sarah, had to phone my stepsister and say, we're not coming after all, I'm really sorry, but he's in a really bad day, a bad way. And that played out time and time and time again. You know, I kind of cut myself off socially. I stopped communicating with people. I hid away. I kind of went to a place where I felt like, because I didn't have anything positive to say, it was better to not say anything and just kind of cut myself off and isolate myself. And I'm really fortunate because throughout this journey, my now wife, then girlfriend, Sarah, was my absolute rock. And she used to make me do this stupid dance whenever I'd get into like a proper funk where I couldn't get out of bed. And because some days, literally getting out of bed was about as good as I could manage, you know, ticking a few things off the to-do list, brush your teeth, get dressed, get out of bed, go for a walk. That was about as much as I could cope with. And on the days where I didn't feel worthy and I didn't feel capable, Sarah would kind of come up to me and do this, like grab me by the hands and she'd go, come on, you've got to dance with me, you've got to dance with me. And like within a minute, almost always within a minute, we would just be laughing at each other and I'd be doing this stupid dance going, stop making me do this stupid dance. But that positive momentum of getting up, moving, your movement affects your state. It got me moving and, you know, within 10 minutes, we could be out of the door, going for a walk in the fresh air, talking things through in a different environment. And things kind of, they got easier. They didn't get better. They just got easier.
It sounds like you were going through clinical depression, to be honest with you, because it's some kind of, it sounds like, I've worked in the past with people where some people have experienced clinical depression and it literally, they couldn't get out of bed. It's a very similar situation.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was clinically depressed. I was medicating on with sertraline and sertraline, and then sertraline for 13 years. So yeah, I was absolutely clinically depressed and in a really bad way very often.
It sounds like, I was just about to ask what kind of solutions, what did you try doing first to try and come out of that? And it sounds like one of the support networks being your girlfriend at the time and now your wife, that would be probably one of the, it would be one of the main areas where things started to improve. Apart from your girlfriend at the time, what else was you doing to try and help yourself move forwards, and apart from medication?
Yeah, so it's a really good question, because I think the thing about depression is it's a vicious cycle, Gav. It's a vicious cycle. You don't think you can, so you don't. And you end up in a negative spiral the whole time. And from, I suppose the thing that I did to make me feel the best before I was finally 13 years after starting on antidepressant to finally kick it for good, the thing that was consistently good at helping me feel better was exercise. So there were times in that period, that 13 years, where I could bring myself, and I did bring myself to a point of going, I feel better. That happened 40 times, right? I told you, I got off tablets 40 times. I feel better. And there was a clear link between me doing exercise and me feeling better. But the exercise alone was never enough. Because I was wearing the plaster cast with the medication, if you like. And the problem is, when I took the plaster cast off, even though the exercise was there and helping me, and I had great support from my family, and a particular friend, it was never enough, and I always ended up back down in a hole for a repeating cycle that lasted for, you know, more than a decade.
Gosh, right. We're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So Pete, thank you for sharing that with us. It's brilliant to hear that you've come out the other end, basically. And it's a real kind of, I'm sure it's motivating to other people that hear your story. With all the things that, some things that were not working, did you get out of depression enough to read the book that changed your life?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I finally got free of the medicine when I learned about personal development. And so I'd been working in various jobs for that 13-year period, going between feeling okay and feeling really low and feeling okay and feeling really low. And the thing about antidepressants is they kind of keep you middling, like they take away some of the really low points, but they definitely take out the high spots as well, the high, I feel great about life. And I quit my job when my little boy was 6 weeks old, because I was in a hole and being bullied by a absolute, I can't swear, so I won't, but you understand.
Yeah.
We were culturally very misaligned. Should we say that the boss that I had, and I quit my job with nothing to do when my little boy was 6 weeks old in a deep hole. And one of my old clients contacted me, saw that I was looking, I was very honest with him about my mental health at the time. And he worked for a business coaching firm, or he had a business coaching franchise company called Action Coach. And he basically took me under his wing and taught me personal development. And all of a sudden, I was involved in an incredible corporate culture for the first time ever in my working life, because my first real job out of uni was working for myself. And then I worked in various sales roles and stuff like that. And all of a sudden, I was involved in an incredible corporate culture where they really put a huge emphasis on growth, personal development and growth. And I was encouraged to read a book a week for the first time ever. Like, I was encouraged to read a book a week. And they say, read a book a week for the rest of your life and you'll change your life. And I came across, in the process of reading a book a week, I came across a book called The Miracle Morning by a guy called Hal Elrod. And the thing I think about depression is there is a way to beat depression, and I think it's actually much easier than I realized. The way to beat depression is by exercising the discipline muscle within ourselves and doing it consistently. Whenever I tick something off my list, even when I was depressed, I felt a little bit better about myself. But the problem was that I didn't do it consistently. Whenever I went for a run, I felt a little bit better, but I didn't do it every day, day after day. And therefore, I didn't give myself the compound effect of the feeling. I kind of gave myself some, and then I stopped doing it, and then I got lazy again, and then I felt worse. And what I uncovered with this book, The Miracle Morning, was some success habits that throughout history you can read. Success leaves clues. And there's this guy called Hal Elrod who had had a car crash and almost died, couldn't walk, had a long road back, and he kind of started looking at the things that people do to be successful. And then he looked at the time of day that people did them, and then he kind of joined up the dots and wrote a book on doing success habits in the morning. And it was an absolute game changer for me, mate. Within a month of practicing the Miracle Morning, I was off the meds and I haven't looked back. And that's...
It literally changed your life. Literally.
It absolutely is my game changer book. I've read almost 200 business and personal development books, and it literally changed my life, that book.
Gosh. And one of the main things you take from that, I'm guessing, is the power in setting yourself goals and objectives and routinely every day aiming to achieve something. And I don't mean like, not, we're not talking about major objectives and stuff like that. We're talking just, it could be, they could be very small, can't they? But you start off, for example, in the morning, you start off going for a run, later on you go to the library, and then whatever else it might be. And then the next day you repeat that and then you extend on that. Am I, is that about the right lines about the, what you, generally we're going with it, or?
So I
was speaking like a very, on a very simple level when I was saying that, by the way, but it just sounds like routine and setting yourself objectives every day is something that really helped.
Yeah, 100%. And I think whenever you do it, it's good, and it's good to do it consistently. But what this guy, Hal Elrod, found was that there are these kind of six steps that people can follow, or people who are successful do on a daily basis. He talks about it in terms of the acronym SCRIBES, or SCRIBERS. And he says that people start with silence or meditation and spend some time in silence, just getting centered and kind of breathing deeply and all of that stuff. And then the A is affirmations. The thing about depression is it is a self-fulfilling prophecy. When we tell ourselves we are rubbish, guess what? We're rubbish. When we tell ourselves we're great, guess what? We're great. Affirmations are the single most powerful thing that a human being can do to influence the course of their life. And any depressed person can convince themselves that they're feeling better than they are. I believe that because it happened to me. So A is for affirmations. V is for visualization. You know, many, many, many scientific studies have proven the phenomenal benefits of visualizing success. If you look at someone, well, any sport, look at any sport, Lewis Hamilton, he's visualizing the turns before he takes the turns. Tiger Woods, he's visualizing the shot before he takes the shot. Johnny Wilkinson is visualizing the kick before he takes the kick. They know where it's going beforehand. And the power of visualization is really, really strong, because you visualize what you want to happen and then you have the conversation, or you visualize the action of you that you're taking and then you go and take it, and you've practiced it in your mind, so you're better at it the second time round, right? So V is for visualization. E is for exercise. Like I said, that was the one thing that used to help me when I was back on the meds back in the day. R is for reading. You know, read a book a week for the rest of your life, sort of stuff. There's lots of things that we can improve about our lives, and when you're depressed, you're unhappy about a lot of stuff. So what are the things that you would like to improve about your life? Buy a book and get 7 years of knowledge that one person has had to acquire to write the book in, if you're a slow reader like me, 10 hours. So reading. And then the final S is scribing or journaling. He couldn't make journaling work within an acronym, so he came up with scribing. But essentially, it's kind of writing down how the day went and what you want to do better tomorrow, essentially. And when he looked at those success habits, what he found was that very often they showed up in successful people. There were lots and lots and lots of people doing those things. So he then went, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it after work tonight. I'm going to sit down and do it. And then he found that after work, he was absolutely knackered and didn't have any time to do it after work. And then he went, when am I going to do it? Okay, I'll try it at lunchtime. And then there was a fire at lunchtime and, you know, 100 emails, and you don't have time to, who's got time to sit down in the middle of the day and meditate and scribe and do some exercise all at the same time? And it was like, okay, so I can't do it after work in the evening. I can't do it at lunchtime. The only time I can do it is in the morning, but there's no time between when I wake up and when I have to start doing work. So I'm going to have to get up an hour early. And he set his alarm clock an hour early, and he got up and he did all six in an hour before the time he would normally get up, and he felt amazing. And he was like, wow, this is good. This is powerful. I feel great because I've exercised my discipline muscle. You know, it's really hard to get out of bed early, especially when, it, you know, it's easier in the States. But in the UK, trust me, in the wintertime, it's cold. Getting up an hour early when it's dark. But you feel amazing because you feel like you've achieved. And then not only have you got up early, you've done all of these things that make you feel good, make you feel like strong and powerful because you've exercised and you've exercised your brain and you've calmed your nervous system down. I kicked antidepressants in a month.
That's brilliant. That's fantastic.
I've been trying for 13 years.
Gosh, that's absolutely amazing. When I've spoken to other people in interviews and we speak about low moods and depression, I hear a lot of people mentioning exercise and how useful it is. And even just walking. Just going for a good walk, you know, in the fresh air, how it improves your mental well-being. It does wonders, isn't it?
Absolutely. If I had understood the link between consistency and positive mental health, I think I would have kicked depression a long time before. But I never mastered that art of consistency. But whenever I exercised, I felt better. Not necessarily in the moment, because sometimes when you're in the middle of a run, it sucks.
Yeah. All the pain and the...
Yeah. I'm about to climb the Brecon Peak at Snowdon twice on Friday and Saturday morning, which is going to... I'm sure it's going to be...
Gosh.
Horrible, but
it's amazing.
Yeah, but so you know, in it might not feel great, but it releases all sorts of amazing chemicals into your body that make you feel like you've achieved. And absolutely. When you're depressed, that's what you need.
Absolutely. We're just going to do a quick ad break, and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, what was it like to secure your idol, best-selling author Hal Elrod, to speak at your network?
Well, it's pretty much a dream come true, mate, to be honest with you. I've been on a personal development journey where I've read lots and lots of books, and alongside reading books and stuff, we touched on it at the beginning. I've been running a business network for the last 6 years. So it started pre-COVID face-to-face in sunny Reading and Newbury. And then we saw COVID come in really early. It was obvious it was coming from China. And when it hit Italy, we were like, right, okay, we're jumping on online. So we've been running online now since January, 21? And we just look to bring phenomenal value to the people who choose to spend their time with us. And one of the things that we are increasingly trying to do is bring bigger and better speakers to the stage. So I reached out to another amazing author that I had been following on LinkedIn, a guy called Bob Berg, who wrote a book on networking called The Go-Giver. And he talks about the importance of just giving profusely and being useful to people. And I thought, if anyone's going to come and talk about, you know... or if anyone's going to be the first person to jump onto my bandwagon, it's going to be Bob Berg, because he talks about, you know, just giving to people without any expectation of receiving. And once I'd had him, it kind of became a little personal mission to find big, influential authors to come along and speak. Hal was the second author that I reached out to. And the second author that said yes. And to put it into perspective on quite what an achievement it is I obviously was visualizing it for quite a while before it happened. But when I spoke to him, and we arranged a Zoom call to see whether we could make it work. And when I spoke to him about my little network and wanting him to speak, he was like, okay, so here's the thing, Pete, my keynote is $48,000, or I do this online version for 13. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that's not going to work, dude. You know, you're playing in a park that I can't even get to. I've never paid any of our speakers, and I never will, because I just want to give value to my community. I'm a raving fan of your work. I shout about you from the rooftops, and if you would be willing to come and talk, then I'll promote it, and I'll get you an audience. And maybe you'll sell some books, which he did.
Oh, but sure.
He was like, not even a little fee. And I was like, no, you're making in three sessions what I'm making in a year, mate. And I've got five people to feed. So no. And he said, okay, let's do it.
Oh, that's good of him, isn't it, in the end, to give in?
Yeah, it was, absolutely. But, you know, he will have sold hundreds of books on the back of it, and good on him, because his book is my game changer, and if I can help him, then I will. And you know, I think about it, Gavin, in the way that I will always say yes. As my profile raises, and I will write a book or multiple books, and I will grow a business that's working without me, I will always say yes, because I've got that go-giver mentality that Bob Berg has. And I guess it's just about surrounding yourself with those sorts of people.
Absolutely, yeah, because you're obviously, well, people that you're surrounded by have an influence, don't they, on how it impacts you and your development.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just basically give us an example of affirmations and visualizations that you use that were powerful, especially to combat depression.
Yeah, that's a really, really great question. So if I start with affirmations, have you ever come across that there's a part of the brain called the reticular activating system, and it's right in the base of the brain, and it essentially connects all of our senses together, like our sight, our taste, our eyes, our hearing, and our internal bodily mechanics. And reticular activating system is the part of the brain that lets you know when you're hot. Like, it's like you're wearing a jumper and a jacket, and it's like, okay, now you're overheating. Take it off. The reticular activating system is the part of the brain that lets you be in a room full of people at a networking event, and all of a sudden you hear your name from somewhere and someone laughing, and all of a sudden the reticular activating system jumps in, and you're focusing on the person that said your name. They might even be talking about you, but it's got you. You know, there's thousands of words happening all around you, but the one word that you need to know is of interest to you, and that's come from the reticular activating system. The reticular activating system is the reason why. Have you ever bought a car? You've been to a showroom or whatever, and you've decided after a bit of research that's the car that you want to get, and you're going to go and buy it, and you look around and you don't see many of them around, maybe one, two. You go and buy the car, you drive it off the forecourt, and then all of a sudden you see that same car in the same color all over the place. Before, you didn't see him anywhere, but now you see him everywhere. You thought you were being unique with your
I know car. Exactly what you're talking about.
That's the reticular activating system.
Okay, that's interesting.
It's responsible for feeding you the bits of information that it thinks you want to know.
That's interesting, because I hear, you know, when you hear motivational kind of videos, maybe on YouTube or social media and all the rest of it, And when you start to focus in a certain area, you're looking for, you know, you're looking for a certain field or objectives, your mind starts to focus and notice areas related to that, which is what you're talking about. Is that right?
Exactly what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. When you so the reason I come to the reticular activating system, it's really important, because when you're depressed, you are constantly telling yourself, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy, I'm I don't have any friends, no one likes me, I can't contribute. They're the thoughts that I had on a daily, hourly basis, flooding through my brain. So your reticular activating system, the really helpful reticular activating system, goes to great lengths to point out all of the things that it thinks that you need to prove you right. So every time you make a mistake, it flags it and it makes you go, see, I told you you were rubbish, I told you you were rubbish, and gives you a little pat on the back of the head. And so affirmations become really powerful, right? Because when you start telling
the power yourself, of positive thinking.
Exactly.
This is where we're going.
This is exactly.
Yeah. Sorry. Do you know what? When you were saying that, I was thinking, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. So the more you say to yourself, no, today's going to be a great day, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, your mind starts to focus in that area and it goes into that direction.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
So to go to your question on the affirmations that are used to help me overcome depression, the first affirmation I tell myself every single day is, I'm a happy, healthy, and fun dad. And I close my eyes and I tell myself that 10 times. I'm a happy, healthy, and fun dad. I'm a happy, healthy, and fun dad. I'm a happy, healthy, and fun dad. And then when my little boy kicks me in the ribs, I'm more likely to respond with, oh, you little monkey, let's have a play fight, rather than rah, 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 because I've told myself I want to be happy, I want to be fun. So I'm going to respond to this action in a way, you know, I choose instead of reacting in one day, in one way, I react in another way. I tell myself that I'm a loving, caring, considerate husband. I'm a loving, caring, considerate husband. I'm a loving, caring, considerate husband. I'm a supportive friend. I'm a supportive friend. I'm a supportive friend. I tell myself that I'm a confident and competent businessman over and over and over again. And there are a bunch of others, but essentially they're the kind of four that I tell myself time after time after time after time to make sure that I show up in the way that I want to show up. And then from a visualization perspective, in my business, I'm very much playing a long game, Gavin. I gave up the pursuit of pure money when I realized that money doesn't make you happy. And, you know, that's one of the gifts that has come from depression for me. I realize early, I think, in a human life, that actually money definitely is not the route to happiness. And I would rather be happy than wealthy. Money, happiness is wealth. So I'm playing a very much longer game with my business. So the visualizations that I have are around 8 to 10 years time in the future, where myself and my wife are traveling around the world with our little boy, because our business is working without us. It's not necessarily staying in 5-star hotels. I don't care whether we're staying in B&Bs or hammocks on the beach. I want the freedom to be able to take him out of school and take him around the world. So I visualize that for myself. And, you know, part of the reason that I do what I do and why I'm building Mastermind 9 in the way that I'm building Mastermind 9 is to build a business that will work without me, so that we make enough money whilst the business performs optimally without us having to do anything. That's the dream for me, dude.
Absolutely. And that's a brilliant objective, I think, because, you know, what better than to be kind of at, you know, have time, freedom, be rich in time and freedom, you know, being able to do what you want, when you want, and, you know, spend time with your family and, you know, at the same time, putting a roof over your head with food on the table, which is absolutely crucial. You can't be more happy than that, isn't it, really?
That's it, mate. That's it.
You know? Pete, it's been great having you back on the show again.
Thanks, mate.
Really appreciate it. Can you just let our listeners know where they can find you if they want to touch base or any of your services or anything like that at all?
Yeah, of course. So I run a couple of businesses. If people want to connect with me on social media, the best place to go is LinkedIn, and you can find me at Peter Molse, which is M-O-L for lemon, S for sugar. So linkedin.com/in/PeterMolse. My websites, I run three businesses under two websites. The Mastermind groups, which are kind of business support groups for growth-focused business owners, is mastermind9.com. So Mastermind, like the old TV show with the number 9 on the end, .com. And then Outside Ideas, which is outside like outdoors, -ideas with an S on the end, .com.
Fantastic. Thanks again for coming on, Pete. Really appreciate your time.
I've loved being here, mate. Thank you so much.
And thank you to our listeners. You know, you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram. Until next time, take care.